Okay, what are we talking about?
So I wanted to talk about that game that I just picked up.
The game you just picked up?
Yeah, I recently picked up the Castle Ravenloft board game.
Yes.
Which, as I understand it, is the same system as their other game. It's Wrath of Ash something. It's...
Okay.
Hold on, let me look up the name of that other game.
Okay. Is it awesome? It's
really awesome. If you've ever played... Yeah, it's Wrath of Ashardalon.
I don't know what that is.
If you've ever played a game that's like Betrayal on House on Haunted Hill.
I don't know what that is. Are these board games?
Yeah, these are board games.
Okay.
So to break it down,
it's
a game. It's a game where you all pick a character. It's pre-made, and then you pick a scenario. So there's different end goals for each time you play.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes it awesome is your game board are these giant square pieces with jigsaw ends, and you shuffle it, and you play off of that. So you have a common starting piece, but every time you explore in a direction that isn't drawn yet, you draw from the tile pile, connect it, and then that's the new section where the dungeon is going. So
sure.
It's a lot like Diablo in that it'll be randomized every time.
Okay.
It's also random in the fact that everything that happens to you and your party occurs via drawing from a deck. So you've got a monster deck, an encounter deck, and an item deck. An encounter deck activates whenever you go into any square that says an encounter happens, like any new tile that says an encounter happens, or when you don't explore. If you take your turn and you end your turn without exploring into a new part of the dungeon, you have to draw from the encounter deck, and it could either result in something beneficial to your party, like you finding treasure, or it could be something hazardous like a trap, or an occurrence like gas starts poisoning, like
okay.
starts filling the room.
What do you mean by explore? Is that just part of your turn?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like every, like move minor standard, explore?
So essentially what they did is they took the fourth edition rules, and instead of putting a minor or whatever, you have your move and your action.
Sure.
Just like in D&D Next.
Sure.
Each tile is, I think it's a 4x4 square.
Oh, so they're not that big?
So they're not that big. But whenever you end
your
turn...
Are your characters in there? Like, do you have little figures?
Yeah. Yeah, they give you minis.
But there's only 4 squares.
Well, it's a 4x4, so it's...
Oh, okay. That's slightly bigger.
Yeah, slightly bigger. So whenever you end your turn on the edge of that tile, you'll place the next dungeon piece ahead there.
Sure. The Fog of War lifts.
The Fog of War lifts. And every time you put it down, there's, on one square of that new tile, there's a pile of bones, and that's where you draw a card from your monster deck to see what monster spawns there.
Okay, so when the Fog of War lifts, and you see some bones,
mm-hmm.
then you draw a card to see what the bones
are. Yeah, what the bones make. Like, they'll cobble together, and then they'll make a monster.
Oh, so is that, like, part of the lore? Is that what happens?
That's how I describe it.
Okay.
But it's super awesome because you never know what pops out. It could be just, like, a minion, and you just crush him down. Or it could be something horrific, like, you know, a gargoyle.
You could draw a boss monster.
You could draw Sephiroth. Like, you could draw Sephiroth. And then your entire party is screwed. Some scenarios have, like, they have an end boss in mind. They tell you to set aside the mini and put him, like, say, okay, get this one ready because you will always face this one at the end. Or it'll be, like, set aside these specific dungeon tiles. And this is what I like about it. So for the one that we played, it said set aside the chapel, which is the square we were trying to get to, the tile we were trying to get to. And then it said take... 3 more shuffle them amongst each other and set that as the ninth tile beneath your all the other dungeon tiles.
So you have to go through 9 rooms.
Yeah, well, 9 to 13, because you shuffled that smaller pile of 4 with the chapel in it, and then stuck it underneath 9 tiles.
Okay.
So presumably, hopefully, you'll reach it after 9 tiles, and then you could do the end part of that scenario.
Okay.
Or you could have bad luck and continue to draw without getting the chapel, and you'll have to fight more monsters.
Hmm.
On the other hand, if you want to delay it, like, you could find the chapel and be like, okay, maybe we're not strong enough to do this yet. Let's go and kill monsters and level for it.
Yeah,
because you can get to level 2.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, is there a benefit to completely exploring everything? Mm-hmm.
The benefit is that you can collect more magical items that will help you in the last instance.
Like gear or?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The cool thing is every player starts with the game by drawing through the treasure deck until they get an item that they can expend. You know, sometimes they're just key items that don't really do
a
much
consumable.
In the scenario. Yeah, they can get in a consumable or equipable item. And so, yeah, you can do that. You also increase your chances of dying, of course, because there's more monsters that'll spawn every time you go through there. Here's the benefit.
Do the rooms get harder as you go on?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. And it's not because the monsters spawn. It's because here's the kicker to the entire scenario.
Mm.
Each player, when they reach 0 hit points, uses a healing surge from the party's healing surges.
Okay. So they're shared lives.
They're shared lives. There are only 2 lives.
Oh, that's it?
Yep. If a turn comes around where a player is unconscious and they're supposed to use a healing surge in order to heal themselves, and there are no healing surges left, the entire party loses.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So that's the hard part.
That's Rock Band rules.
Yeah. So what's really neat is that you can kill monsters and gain experience. When you have 5 experience and you roll a critical hit, you can exchange your five experience points to level up.
So you have to get 5 experience and roll a critical?
Yes.
Why do you need to roll a critical?
I don't know. But it seems to work out considering that, you know, it's like a 5% chance to do it. And within an hour, with how fast the turns go, you'll at least roll it, you know, once.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to come around then. There are other ways in which you can gain experience, and I think there are even encounter cards where you just level. Like, hooray, by some miracle you level.
Is there a level cap?
It only goes to level 2. Because you only play for an hour, and then, you know, it'll restart.
What happens when you level?
You get more abilities.
Okay, more cool moves.
Yeah. So like 4th edition, when you take your character card, you can go and look through your moves, and you pick which moves you get for that class. So you can be a ranger, but you won't be the same ranger every single time, because you'll pick different moves, a different daily.
Okay.
And you can equip it based on how you feel like it'll work with the party. So our ranger made sure that she took abilities that would help us explore better. She concealed tiles ahead. Like, she can explore without standing in the edge of it. That way, if a monster spawns, it'll still take a turn to reach us.
Okay.
And, yeah, so that gives it a little more flexibility. Another thing that happens with experience is, so, say you explore a tile or whatever, and the next section of the dungeon says an encounter happens. You can flip it over, read it, show everyone. And instead of dealing with it, instead of having to fight it, depending on whether it's, you know, a trap or a sickness or a condition or something like that, or a curse, you can spend 5 experience points to negate it. And that represents your hero overcoming that challenge.
Huh.
So if it's a trap, that means you see it before it ever happens and you disarm it.
Okay.
And another time that encounters happen is if you don't explore at the end of your turn. So if you decide to hang around in this dungeon, things are going to happen. So you draw from the encounter deck, and it could spawn a monster. It could, you could trip a trap that you didn't know was there, and it gets really crazy. Like, after a while, you're like, let's go through this entire journey, let's go, we gotta get to the chapel now, and it's this crazy, fun, little game. And it pretty much only lasts about an hour. Mm-hmm. You'll reach the end point by around then, like an hour is 20 minutes. And fights go by really quick. Like, that's the one thing I love about it.
Sure.
So, it's really neat. I can't wait to try out the other game. Because this one is set in Ravenloft, and it has this sort of gothic horror theme. And the other one, The Wrath of Ashardalon, it's a traditional D&D, so it's a fantasy one where you're trying to hunt a dragon.
But it's pretty much the same thing, right? Just a different scenario.
The cool thing about it is the character classes on that game are different from the ones in Ravenloft.
Okay.
And so are the tiles.
Sure.
And they're cross-compatible.
That's cool.
Yeah. So you can use the Ravenloft characters in that game, or you can use the Ashardalon characters in Ravenloft.
I like that. Mix them together.
Yeah. And it was really neat. It was only around $50, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I had a lot of fun with it. I can't wait to bring it around. I think one of the best things about it is there are times where you want to play D&D or like some kind of tabletop game, but you don't really have the time to set up. I mean, it takes forever to set up for it, and somebody has to DM. With this game, the players control the monsters. There's no real DM.
Yeah.
And it's very simple to pick up and play. I really like it, and I think it's a great game. So if you have a chance to check it out at your hobby shop, like, it's a neat little thing. The neat thing about that setting is, like, the original module that it came for was a lot like this board game, in that a lot of things were randomized, but there were repetitive features. There were repetitive objects that you had to get in order to help you beat the game. And the rules that they came in, because I found the Ravenloft book for 3.5. There are instructions to make it a super long campaign, so like one that's like 16 sessions of 2 hours each.
Okay.
And then there are rules for one that it's only 4 sessions. But the one that I really thought was awesome was they set one where it's like you can play this entire storyline, a simplified version of this storyline, in 2 hours. And it had the same thing as this board game where it's like randomized goals, but a simplified goal. And like randomized items that you need to beat it and a simplified goal. And I really want to use that for the charity game.
Okay.
This year.
Ravenloft.
Ravenloft.
It's both a place and a mansion, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess they named it after the mansion. Like, they named the world after the mansion.
So the mansion Ravenloft is not in the country Ravenloft.
Yeah, the country is called Barovia? Yeah, Barovia.
Okay.
Yeah. I mentioned it in the comments, but I had a major setback with the write a novel in a month project.
I save everything in Notepad, and I push Control S
endlessly. As you should. Unfortunately, I can only blame myself because I only use Yarny and other programs like it because I'm too lazy to Control S.
I don't understand how people have this problem. It's like I just lost 5 hours of work. It's like, well, what happened? I never saved. It's like, okay.
Well, the thing is,
well,
like,
well, weren't before you were so proud of this? What is it, Yarny? Is that what
it's
called?
Yarny.
You were so proud of it because it saves automatically or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It saves to the cloud.
Yeah, it does.
And you were recommending it to people.
I was.
What happened?
Essentially, I was using it, and what ended up happening was I used it like normal, I finished whatever part of that novel I was working on. I closed it. And then I logged on the very next day, and I found that not only the snippet that I wrote that day, that chapter that I wrote that day was gone, but also the ones that I had written the day before and the day before that were gone.
Well, where'd they go?
Into the abyss. I have no idea, but they're permanently gone.
Well, what happened?
I think what ends up happening is it saves it to the cloud, right?
Okay, yes, the mystical cloud.
The mystical cloud.
Who knows where.
If their servers have problems, there may be data loss.
It's all on them. If there's server hiccups.
Yeah. And I think that's what happened. I think while I was writing those three sections, they might have been having problems repairing the cloud.
Or something.
And by the time it all stabilized, it was just random data. So it faded away.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So I'm still going to write it. I don't think I'll make my goal at all because, like, the whole thing really threw me off.
Sure.
I have my notes, but it's not as good as actually having the primary draft.
Anyway. So you lost your life.
Your life's work is gone. Thankfully, once that happened, I made sure to check all of my other documents on Yarny. The other projects are fine. Like, I guess it was just that one week that I was working on it, and it was having problems.
How come you don't use Google Docs anymore? Is that because of that page break thing?
Yeah. The page break thing kind of bugged me. And the fact that the menus are constantly around it, so, you know, I don't know. Yarny just seems a lot cleaner because after you type for a little while, the only thing that's visible is the page.
Yeah, you just like the interface better.
Yeah.
Is there an option for that in Google Docs?
No.
Have you looked through it?
Yeah, it either is full screen where you're super close to the text, or you can take away a part of it, but there's still something visible. And I like the fact that the word count for your document is always visible by chapter, whereas in Google Docs, you kind of have to do a command line of Control Shift C or whatever, and then you see,
I see
what your word count is. And
so
this
Yarny thing is pretty much designed for writing novels?
Yes.
Chapters and whatnot.
Yeah, it's essentially designed for writing longer projects of a very structured sort. And it's taught me a few really good habits about it. Particularly, it makes it easier for me to write out of linear order, which is something that I rarely do and something that I should practice a little more, because a lot of writers that work on longer forms do this.
You talk about it a lot, and I thought you did, but then you don't, and then you start doing it again.
No, the thing is, I don't write them.
Think about them.
I think about them, yes.
Because we've had this discussion before where you'll have all these awesome scenes in your head. I thought you were writing them down.
I have them. I have those images, and I do write those images down, but it's a trailer. Like, I have the trailer of the movie in my head, but I'll write it still linearly.
And then you have to figure out how to connect them.
Yes. And that's something that a lot of people say that you shouldn't do because you shouldn't. Yeah, because a lot of writers that I've spoken to over the years, they've told me, like, no, don't wait to get to the awesome scene. Write the awesome scene first.
Right, yeah.
It's like, write all of the awesome scenes and then string them together.
Yeah, that's the way you want. Yeah.
But when I do it, I don't know, I feel like I can't fake it.
You don't like that.
I don't like that.
You don't like doing it that way.
I don't like doing that
I think
that way.
I think that's kind of how I write usually. Well, especially when I'm just writing a comic and I come up with a punchline. It's like, okay, how do I get to the punchline? That's sort of similar.
Yeah.
More short form. But I'll do that with longer arcs too. Like, I'll know what I want to happen throughout the arc.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how I'm going to get there. I just wing it.
Yeah.
Like, I know the start and the beginning, so I just start making it.
Mm-hmm.
And just make it up as I go.
And that's often, like, well, we talked about that in our panel up in Washington, where, yeah, it's like, there is no wrong way, really. But I feel like, personally, as a writer, I should experiment, and I should try every way, and really...
Yeah, no reason
make
not
sure,
to.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. I might as well make sure that the way that I write right now is comfortable, but that I'm not missing out on any other methods.
As long as you're having a good time writing.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the most thing. That's one of the things that was most upsetting about losing part of my work. Like, the scene that I was writing,
was awesome.
It was awesome, and I loved it. And I had worked. I had trimmed on the wording for a long time, and I was satisfied with it. It's like,
yeah,
that was a perfect sandcastle. And I came back, and it was gone.
Someone kicked it over, yeah.
Yeah, someone kicked it over, and I was like, dang! Like, I can't even remember what that sandcastle.
Of course not.
Looked like
it's gone forever.
Yeah,
hopefully the new one will be better.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
You know, you gotta tell yourself that, make yourself feel better.
Otherwise, you'll be depressed.
Yeah, forever. Well, that's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was one of the I actually got talked to on LOL about programming.
Some guy?
It was some girl. She was asking me. It was a lady. And I guess she heard on the last podcast that we were thinking about developing a game.
So there actually are people that listen to it?
I guess so.
I don't know. Are you sure?
She was like, yeah. She's like, I thought you were a programmer. It's like, I thought you knew a lot about programming. And I told her, well, I did in high school, like, that was my major, but I haven't written a line of code in years.
I have. I probably
yeah,
know
you've
more
done
than
your,
you do now.
You've done a lot of code. Well, you did know more than me in high school.
I don't know if I'd say that. I was more concerned with making a 3D model of the Master Sword.
Yeah.
Which came out very nicely. Actually, my Goomba came out the best, I think.
Yes. No, your Goomba's...
I made him walk and everything. And then you were trying to make, like... You tried to make sprites for a while. What else did you do?
I had a lot of fun with that until...
You made a gun.
Yeah, that gun was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was doing the sprites for a long time until the team decided, it's like, no, we could totally throw this in a 3D engine. I'm like, so, no sprite work. And then
I sadly
put it away.
I don't think we really... I don't think we were that organized or whatever.
No,
we didn't really know what we wanted to be doing or anything. But
yeah.
Oh well.
But we had a lot of fun with it, and we learned a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, you were saying about this lady.
So yeah, and she. So ever since then, like she's been asking me about what I do and what coding languages I do know, and she's been giving me her background, and I'm really like. I think it would be really cool if at some point we could get some sort of fan collaboration going. I mean, I doubt that we could do it now. We don't have as huge a fan base, but it would be really cool to someday, like, throw together a project with.
I guess. Nah, maybe.
Maybe.
I would want to just do everything myself. Then it'll be perfect.
Yeah.
No, because then you don't have to wait on other people, and that's kind of how I am.
I think that's one of the neat things about creating, is that you know, good or bad, it's still all you.
Yeah, well, you made something that wasn't there before.
Yeah, and I feel like ultimately, because sometimes you know it really gets to the point where you're creating. And sometimes when you make something, it's like, man, that's the last time I'll ever do something that awesome or whatever. And you get depressed about it, but you keep creating anyway. We take that for granted or whatever. And I just really like the fact that once you're done with it, you can say, hey, I made that.
Oh yeah. That's why I forced myself on the schedule. so I'm forced to keep getting better. That's the idea, anyway.
Yeah, it's like I want to write more short stories, just so I can try to get them published. And sometimes I get like really scared. I'm like, well, they didn't publish that other story. Why would they publish the other? Like that terrible critic in your head.
Mm. Like, I can't. Yeah, it's like everyone is their own worst critic.
Yeah. That was really funny. In one of my college courses on writing, they had a really weird exercise where they're like, think about your inner critic. It's like, what does he look like? Write a backstory for him.
Okay.
Well, it's like, my inner critic is me.
Like, yeah.
Me.
Except he's probably got, like, longer fangs, but...
Yeah, exactly. Gnarled claws. I feel like all creators suffer from that. They have that.
That's just the way it is.
No.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what have you been up to, John?
Well, I wasn't going to bring up MechWarrior again, but I've just been playing MechWarrior. Because that's all we talk about now. But I'm not really playing the online one as much. Like, I got MechWarrior 4, and I got Mech Commander. That's the best.
Mech Commander?
Mech Commander.
What's Mech Commander?
It's more of an RTS StarCraft style. Except you still build all your units beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But then you take them into the fight, and it's an overhead click-and-drag RTS style formula.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's the best.
More strategic?
Makes it more tactical.
Wow.
Because you have to choose which mechs, which units to take into this mission, but how to outfit them.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, how you should control them during the mission. Because the missions can run on for a while, and it's like, which one should I have go doing this, and which one should I have go do this?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it's fun. MechWarrior. Can't get enough of these MechWarriors.
I think that's the one thing. It's like giant robot games are either really, really good or just really meh. Like, just...
No, for me, I love them all.
You love them all?
Even if I know they're bad.
Yeah.
Like, I've played all of the Gundam games.
I think the worst one I've ever played was one on the Xbox. And it was a Robotech game. But, like, it looked like the coolest game ever, because the graphics were all neat. It was, like, one of the first Xbox games, so it looked really awesome to me.
Okay.
Like, it was the best that it had. But the control scheme, it had one of those control schemes that they could never, ever program a tutorial for. And instead, on the first mission, they showed you a picture of the Xbox controller and a million different arrows saying, how it was like, this one fires your gun and this one fires your laser.
Lots of games were back like that back then.
It's like, shake your controller to spread your wings. Like, none of them ever, like, explained what those specific weapons did. They would come up with sci-fi names for each of the weapons, but they never told you what it was.
It was a Robotech game?
Yeah.
Which one was it?
I can't remember.
Because I remember there were two.
It was a third-person shooter, if that
helps. No, I think they were all like that. There were at least two that I knew of. And I think... I want to say the first one I played on the PS2 and the second one I played on the Xbox, but I might be wrong. The first one was amazing. It was the best.
Yeah.
The second one was not so amazing. Because for one thing, you weren't in the mech the whole time. Like, I think you're on foot sometimes, and then you'd be on, like, a motorcycle or something like that.
Oh, no.
Did those things happen? And you were, like, fighting weird aliens?
In the one that I played, I was pretty much in a mech the entire time.
Was it cel-shaded?
No, it wasn't cel-shaded.
Really?
No.
Huh. Well, I know for sure the one I'm thinking of is called Robotech Battlecry. It had a really cool theme song.
I think that was Battlecry, maybe it was cel-shaded.
Yeah, it was cel-shaded. I remember it was that and Jet Set Radio were the first cel-shaded games I played.
Yeah.
Actually, they were probably the first cel-shaded games ever. There weren't a whole lot of them back then.
Did they have...
But, oh, about Robotech. It's best game. Best game. Hard.
The PS2 one?
The Battle Cry one. Was on the PS2, yeah, because you could switch between your forms on the fly, and it was the best. You had three forms. You could be in your jet flying around, and then you push a button and you switch to mech mode, and you have your giant rifle, and you could like hover. And then there was this weird in between jet with robot legs and arms, but you were a jet.
A grappler ship.
It was this really weird in between. I don't remember what the purpose of that one was.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't as fast. I don't know, I think maybe you could shoot more missiles when you were in that form, something silly like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good game. I liked it.
I've been waiting for that, I wonder if it came out already, but the Zone of Enders,
the HD collection?
Yeah.
Yeah, that came out. I heard it's a good collection. Like, they did a good job of, porting it or whatever. Turning it into HD. They didn't fail like they did with the, I think it was the Silent Hill collection that just came out.
Yeah, they broke Silent Hill 2.
Yeah, for, like, whatever reason, they just ruined it by porting it.
Yeah, like,
they just did a bad job of it.
Well, here's what happened.
Then they changed the voices and... Actually, did we talk about this on the podcast?
No, we did. We did. What they did wrong, and this is only on the 360 version, in Silent Hill 2, there is no fog.
Right. So, you can see all the bad geometry and stuff?
It's not scary. There's no fog. You can see clear across.
Like, you can see farther than you should be able to.
Yeah. And it's like, and the worst part of it is, they are not going to patch it. They issued a statement. They're like, sorry, guys. It's just not happening.
Oops. Oh, well.
Yeah. You spent your money. Sorry about that. That was... I also heard that the Metal Gear one...
That was supposed to be good, wasn't it?
Good. Yeah. I wanted to grab that one just for Snake Eater.
Yeah, well, it's got... what is it? No, I don't remember. It's the... special editions, right? But it doesn't have the first game. It doesn't have the first game for some reason.
No.
But it's got Metal Gear Solid 2, the Subsistence on the version. Or no, Metal Gear Solid 3 was Subsistence. But it's got those versions, right?
Yeah. It's Substance and Subsistence.
Right. I always get them switched for some reason.
Yeah.
But I always wanted to play that version of 3 because they changed the camera.
Yeah, the camera's a lot better. They added an extra mode of difficulty. It was like, it's European Extreme or something like that.
No, yeah.
That's so hard.
I actually beat Metal Gear Solid 2 on European Extreme. It was the best.
Oh.
What they did to make it harder, I remember specifically it was already harder. You had less health and the enemies had more health and they were smarter and more of them and all that stuff. But what they also did is the fight with Olga on the tanker.
Yeah.
You couldn't shoot the light out.
Yeah, you told me about that.
It's like, what?
Yeah,
that's a couple times she does it, which makes it like a super awesome fight, you know?
Yeah, I love that fight.
Yeah, she'll shine a light in your eyes to blind you. You literally can't see her. And then she'll also shoot off like a tarp to get in the way. Like, she can see through it for some reason because she's the computer. And she gets a headshot every time.
She's got the high ground.
Yeah. She gets +5 to her agility. But yeah, you can counter that on the hardest difficulty. But anyway.
I feel like we had this conversation years ago, but I believe that we came to the agreement that I favored 3 over 2 and you favored 2 over 3.
Yeah, I disagree.
Yeah.
I didn't like how silly the third one was.
It was really silly. It was like...
Because the bosses really define the Metal Gear Solid games.
Yeah.
And I did not like them at all in the third one. I didn't like any of them.
I don't think we went into why, but I think we just discussed like how you thought the second one was a lot better.
Well,
The one reason why I like 3 a lot more was because like...
Well, you like Big Boss.
I like Big Boss, and I essentially like the way that they tell those stories, and essentially it's more about people than events.
It's a really good story that they told, and they told it well.
But the thing that I really love about the second one is that, like, by the end of it, it completely blows your mind. Like, it's super awesome. It's the best action movie ever made in video game form. But
I would give that to Uncharted, probably. But anyway,
really?
For action movie?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
Metal Gear Solid is more of a, I don't know, what would you describe it as?
Spy fiction thriller. The thing that I like about it is like the conclusion of the second one you'll never forget because it starts making you question not just the story but the game in itself. Like when they start doing all the trippy stuff with your codec, or they're like Raiden, stop playing the game. Like you can save now and you can go away, and you know the little screen you're still fighting. It makes you, like, think, like, oh, my God, yeah, it reminds you you're playing a game. It has this meta aspect that's so weird.
Yeah, but they pulled it off.
They pulled it off really well.
But, yeah.
And I do admit, like, 3 does get really, like, I don't know how, but I guess apparently Kojima explains how all the bosses work. They did really well in the second one. Fortune makes a lot of sense. But, I guess. You know, controlling bees. B grenades, B shotgun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I liked it because it was funny and cool, but it's still in the back of my mind. I agree with you as a writer, it's still weird to me. I don't know. I just like it more.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that was the point. It was supposed to be like, tongue in cheek and just for fun.
Yeah,
but I didn't think the boss fights were enjoyable. I didn't have fun with them.
I think that's actually the weakest point of its sequel in Portable Ops.
Twin Snakes is still my favorite Metal Gear Solid game.
I don't know, overall, I feel like all the missions were great, but the bosses weren't.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But Portable Ops, I still feel, is like one of the best games I've ever played on the PSP. I want to get one just for Persona 4.
I thought you had a PSP.
I don't have one.
What happened to it?
I sold it.
I see.
I sold it after... Because after Metal Gear came out, there wasn't many things that were out. Like,
sure.
It was kind of like how...
I'm not familiar with the PSP games. I know they make a lot of, they port over a lot of old PlayStation 1 games and stuff like that.
They do now. They do now. They didn't have a lot of that going on then, which if they had, I would have easily bought, you know, the old Final Fantasies and played through them again. But there really wasn't a lot available.
I wanna say that one of the early games that came out on the PSP was the Final Fantasy Anthology. The 1 and 2.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah, but I've played so many versions. I had the Game Boy Advanced version of that, and my brother also had the PlayStation 1 of that, which had
the PlayStation cut. 1. Yeah,
that's so the one I it's played. Like, and essentially that was exactly what it was, except for a few more enhancements.
Yeah,
but
the PSP 1 was the same as the PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
The 1 and 2.
The thing is, I believe that it was probably a month or two after I sold my PSP that the Final Fantasy Tactics was ported. I was kind of sad about that, because it's like the original Tactics was really good. It was super hard, but it was also really good.
On the PlayStation, right?
On the PlayStation, yeah.
I see.
But yeah, I think we don't have a question.
No.
Do we? I wanted to ask...
Kind of just rambling.
Yeah, well, I want to bring this podcast to a head and ask you.
Do what now?
Well, I want to close off with this question.
Oh, okay.
What is the earliest, like, do you remember the first terrible game you've ever played?
Probably not. I don't.
Like, what is the earliest bad game you remember playing?
I don't,
like, just playing things terrible.
I don't play bad games.
Really? Like, you didn't rent any of the games and then came across one that was like, why am I even...
I guess there's some that were, like, I was disappointed in. Like, mm-hmm. I wish this was better. Like, I remember Drakengard isn't too old. I mean, yeah. I guess it's old now, because it's 2012.
Because we're both, ancient.
Yeah, we're both old men. Do you remember Drakengard?
Yeah.
It was,
I played the second one.
Oh, was the second one better?
Well,
you didn't play the first one.
I didn't play the first one, but okay. I have watched reviews of it, and I've seen it being played in front of me.
Okay. Well, anyway, not to get into this rabbit hole of Drakengard. It was okay. I thought it could have been a lot better. Cause you do lots of cool stuff. Like, there's lots of really big army fighting. You're fighting lots of enemies at once, and you're flying around on a dragon. I don't know, it just could have been better. The story was all over the place and didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
There were 20 different endings that none of them made any sense.
That was my main critique
they
of
really,
it.
Yeah, they really didn't make sense.
But, they poured this jigsaw of a puzzle on a table and said, there, ship it.
An earlier one that I just thought of it was called Way of the Samurai, which I think was on the first PlayStation. Might have been
really?
PlayStation 2.
You didn't Way of the Samurai?
It was like 10 minutes long. It was the shortest game ever. The idea is that it wants you to play it over and over and over again and see all the different endings.
Yeah,
and play it different ways.
Okay.
I beat it like 3 or 4 times within an hour or two. It's okay. Like, people think that the Assassin's Creed mechanic is bad. How everyone kind of waits.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you wait for someone to attack you and you counter and kill them. Even though it's really not that bad in Assassin's Creed. But, you know, that's something that people complain about.
Yeah.
That was the entirety of Way of the Samurai.
I think, yeah. The thing is, they were trying to respect it.
The second one was much better.
Yes.
Like, the storylines were more in-depth, and, I don't know, just everything about it, the second one was better, much improved.
Okay.
But, yeah, anyway.
That's, wow.
Those are the only ones I can think of right now. I can't think of any older than that, I don't think.
That's been such a long time since I played Way of the Samurai. I remember I liked it, but I didn't think it was, a great game. I just thought it was a decent game.
Yeah. Well, did you have... game you didn't like?
The earliest one that I didn't like, and I love it because it was the first thing that I wrote about when I thought about a bad game was Bubsy.
Oh. You didn't like Bubsy? I thought it was a lot of fun.
I could not control that cat. I had no idea, like, it
really?
Got super hard because, like, once you got to the middle part of the game, those jumps became so critical.
I guess.
And it's like, oh my god, you're moving so weird. That one was, ugh.
I don't know, I mean, it was hard. I remember it being hard.
It just, ugh.
Eh.
It hurt to play.
But anyway, I was saying, it was definitely hard, but I don't know if that was the fault of the controls or not. Like, maybe if I played it again. Are the platforming controls not that good?
Yeah, they're terrible.
Maybe but, I just couldn't recognize bad controls back then.
But the thing is, the reason why I think the reason why I recognized it so much how weird it was because I only had one platformer of a similar kind to compare it to, and that was Sonic the Hedgehog. I had the very first Sonic the Hedgehog, and then I realized, oh, this is kind of the same genre, and this is kind of what they were going for.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they were trying to do, was make Sonic.
So I was like, why is it so much harder for you to, like, because it wasn't as tight, and it just felt so weird playing it.
Mm.
I don't know.
I didn't think that critically back then. I was just happy to be playing video games.
Is that, oh man. The reason why I wanted to ask you that, because I was watching Game Grumps, and they were playing Sonic 2006.
Okay.
And, I think it was, like, they were just talking about that, like, this, imagine a kid getting this for his birthday, like, this could be his worst game ever, experience ever. And I thought, I just decided to think about it, like, what was the first one that really frustrated me, or I thought, like, not fun at all? And it was that game. It was Bubsy. I think there were a few, adventure games I had on the PC. I can't even remember the names of it, because there were those odd, Sierra point and click adventures that ended in death, like, at the wrong answer.
Okay. Where are you going with this?
I'm saying, like, this is the second one that I thought it was really bad.
Oh, so you didn't like those either?
I didn't like those either.
Okay.
Because, A, you died at random points, and a lot of times you didn't know why you died.
Mm-hmm.
It was very Zork in that way, where it's like just, oh, you died. And then the second part is, it's possible to make a playthrough of the game where you miss a key item, and it's impossible to go back, so you can't win.
Mm.
And this could happen like 4 hours in.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's just bad design.
Yeah. I was just thinking about it, like, I was trying to remember a few examples of that, but I can't remember any of those adventure games that came out. There was one that was like, I thought it was called Homeworld, but that's a different game.
That's a space RTS.
Yeah, it was something, and then the subtitle was Homeworld, and that's the one that I played that was super hard and brutal, like... There were some answers that I didn't even... Because years later, I found it on an abandonware site, and I looked up a walkthrough, and some of the solutions were very, very deep. It's like, oh, you move the chair, and then underneath the chair, there's the carpet. You got to use this random item with the carpet, and then you found the gun. And that's how you kill the guard. But there's nothing in the art to indicate that, like, one chair... is the movable one, and the other chair across from the table is interactive. Because you can't interact with any of the other three.
That's how pretty much all of the old adventure games were. Like, I had that problem with Monkey Island.
Really?
I had a hard time with Monkey Island. I know that's your favorite game, and you know it inside and out. I'm sure you spent forever on it. But for me, I played it, a couple years ago, so fairly recently. You know, I played the special edition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why? How would I know that walking onto a certain tile would make any difference than walking on all the other tiles?
Oh, are you talking the plank quest?
Yeah, there was a bird in your way, and you had to walk behind the bird. You had to do it several times, too.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay.
Yeah.
That's just how the games were designed back then.
I think...
You had to click on everything to see what you could click on and try everything.
I'm not sure whether it's in that instance, but a lot of the interactable blah blah blah, all the items you can interact with in the world are highlighted when you put your cursor over it.
Now they are. Not back then.
No, back then. That's how I played it.
I think there's a dog barking.
Yes, there is.
I think your cursor will usually change. So that you know you can click on this.
No, like, on the text, it would say, like, rickety door or whatever. Mm-hmm. So when you press looked at, and then you could drag it across the entire room, it would say rubber chicken with a pulley in the middle.
Sure.
And then I realized, oh, I can interact with that item somehow.
Sure.
But, yeah, I will admit that stupid, that plank, I was stuck there. And
anyway.
But it's just like, if it were that puzzle for the entirety of a game... That's how hard that game was.
Which game? Because
the Homeworld one.
Uh-huh.
Something Homeworld. Exactly how hard it
was. Okay.
I also hear that the Indiana Jones games were, like, really cool, but they also had, like, insta-deaths. But at least they made them awesome. Like, it was possible to be crushed by the rock or whatever.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I don't know.
I never played those. I didn't play adventure games. We didn't really have a computer. For a long time, and even then, we didn't really play games on the computer. We had a PlayStation and stuff.
Oh.
And we played those games.
Well, I'm glad you picked up Monkey Island afterward.
When the special edition came out a few years ago. It's not bad. I mean, it's a good game. It was worth playing.
Yeah. I played...
I think it's definitely really aged, though.
Yeah. I will say that. I played it, and it didn't have the same, It still had some of the charm, but I wasn't as entertained as I was back then. I was more playing it just to retrace my steps.
Sure.
Yeah. Anywho, I think this is a good place to stop.
Yep.
But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. If you guys have any questions or anything you want to ask us about the comic or just in general what we think about games, you should leave us a message in the comments or you can email us.
I always think it's weird how you end out every podcast by saying, it's like, I hope you enjoyed the show. It's like, it wasn't much of a show, but...
I don't know.
I don't know, I listen to
a lot of podcasts like that, and I don't know. Entertaining.
It's like, I don't know. Like, you could call it a show.
I guess. we gotta have guests on here.
Because, you know, we pretty much ignore the audience the entire time anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, to suddenly start talking to them out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I just think it's a better way to.
It's polite.
It's true. Polite. So. Alrighty.
Yeah. Alright. Anyway, now I have to go and edit this hour long gibberish.
I'm hungry. I have to search for something.
Well, you go do that.
I'll talk to you later then.
Alright. Yep. Okay.